Is there a formula to establish the equivalent of an objective go-no-go decision analysis on whether or not you should take the COVID vaccine? I have one for you, and that's next. Welcome to Culture Shift, the Barry Ferris Show. We are living in an American culture that has shifted from tolerant to cancel culture, from decent to rude, from optimistic to cynical, and from relatively safe to increasingly violent. But it's not too late. I hope to equip you with a historical framework applied to current events so you can lead and get America back on track for good. Welcome back to the Barry Ferris Show, Culture Shift. As you know, there's a huge push to get your COVID vaccine if you haven't already done so. In my home state of Colorado, over 70% are vaccinated, yet the panic has set in again due to the Delta variant. What if there was a way to crank out a personalized score from an objective formula to decide whether or not the vaccine is for you? In this podcast, I'm going to give you a tool. At the end of the process, you can have some real confidence that your decision has been thought through and made based on the data, not propaganda. I have a college-aged friend who's really smart, very capable, and I just had lunch with him and asked him a few questions. Fine young man. But all of his inputs are one-sided. They all come from one liberal point of view because that's what his social media feeds are delivering to him. In this show, I'm going to provide you with a broad array of the arguments for and against getting the vaccine. Armed with that information, you should be equipped to decide what's best for you. I'm simply attempting to give you a tool to clear up the fog. At the end of the day, I think you should be wise about your personal health. I don't think you should be pressured, though, to make a decision about your personal health. I believe you should have the freedom to choose what's best for you. So if we're going to use an objective formula that computes an objective go, no-go, or do, don't-do decision, we'll need to borrow two things from the business world. The first is kind of the platform. It's the concept of a break-even analysis. Technically, it's an actual formula. For accounting, it's calculated by dividing the fixed costs of producing an item by the price per item minus the variable cost of producing it. Investors use a similar formula. It's simply calculated by determining when the price of your asset equals the cost. So to continue with this business analogy, at the end of the day, when a manager of a business or an investor performs this break-even analysis, he or she has some objective, non-emotional way to think through the decision. So if I need to sell more units than I believe I can reasonably produce to reach break-even, then I can decide against that production run. And that usually would lead to a no-go decision. But let's say the investor calculates the cost and the risk of the investment and believes it to be low compared to the near-term value of it. That would often lead to a go decision. But that only captures the formula for the break-even point. There are almost always other issues to consider. So how do business leaders capture a score for those other things? They build a table called a go-no-go decision matrix. It can get real sophisticated, but it's normally pretty simple at bottom, at the end of the day. And that's where the rows are the relevant factors, and the columns represent the three broad categories of negative, neutral, or positive. And each of those categories has a score. So when you objectively score each relevant item, these points are totaled. If you have more negative points than neutral or positive points, you should probably kill the project. If you have more positive points, you probably should go for it. If you land in the middle, the business leader usually doesn't totally kill the business initiative, but will rather set it aside for a future discussion at a later time, and that may be after more data comes in. One of the benefits of going through this process is the discipline of formally remembering that you always have a choice. Even when the choice is to do nothing, you're never forced to do something bad, unethical, against your beliefs, or that would hurt your company. So, we built a go-no-go decision tool for the COVID vaccine. If you like the concept, we'll actually provide you the spreadsheet. There you can play with the assumptions yourself and create your own go-no-go decision. Simply subscribe at theBarryFerrisShow.com. Whenever you sell your contact info, we just actually send you an email once a month. All right, let's have some fun. In the COVID go, no-go formula, there are over a dozen relevant factors. These include the scientific arguments for and against the vaccine. These also include demographic and health information accumulated from the CDC and other health agencies and scientists over the past year. And finally, I provide a mechanism for you to make objective the very subjective concept of freedom rights. Of course, my show is all about freedom. I have a bias toward freedom, but you might disagree. You might apply your score to each freedom right issue that I believe are pertinent. You might apply a different one. I think freedom of movement and freedom of choice over your own body and freedom of privacy over your health decisions and freedom from government intrusion into your health information or decisions is important. You might think it's less important. At the end of the day, they are your inputs. And if you score it honestly, according to you, you should have a reliable tool to feel confident about your decision. For the actual relevant factors themselves, I'm using a 5-point scale. All that's on that spreadsheet. So to be true to the discipline of the concept, we've eliminated non-relevant COVID and vaccine-related issues. For example, it might be fun to talk about the public relations amateur hour of mixed signals from health and government officials. So, you know, get the vaccine so you don't have to wear a mask, but wait, now that you got the vaccine, you still need to wear a mask. But incompetence in that arena isn't necessarily correlated to whether or not you should get the vaccine, or it's a good idea for you. We could also talk about how big the drug companies are and how they're granted full immunity against any liability, regardless of the long-term consequences. Or we could discuss how they profited from the vaccine. Did you know, for example, that Moderna went from a $4 billion to $145 billion market cap since COVID? Or we could talk about how Dr. Fauci is effectively a part owner of Moderna through his patents. But as juicy as those topics are, they are not directly relevant to whether or not you should get it. So with that in mind, let's just go through some of the relevant factors that are in the GoNote decision tool. On the side of the proponents of the vaccine, the primary claim is that you will reduce your symptoms to the mild category and avoid long-term ill effects from COVID if you take the vaccine. On the side of the opponents of the vaccine, they claim that you can reduce your risk of severe symptoms with just a more proactive approach to personal immune-boosting practices. The proponents argue that COVID vaccines have been administered to over 190 million Americans and from all vendors, not just the three that we have in the United States, to over 4 billion people worldwide. The side effects of that happen pretty quickly, and after the impacts of the antibody load is delivered, you're over it. And they normally move through the whole body within a couple of weeks. And the claim is that with such a huge sample size worldwide, the vaccines are proven to be mostly safe. The opponents of the vaccine say, well, it's not FDA approved. And until it is, the actual side effects long term are not known. And the known side effects are severe, including death. And the U.S. vaccine reporting site, VAERS, may only represent 1% of the total actual side effects out there. I mean, it could be much less safe than we know. The proponents, alternatively, point to the leading AMA-certified professionals, such as the Mayo Clinic, and claim that the leadership of these prestigious health facilities are supportive of the vaccine. The opponents of the vaccine believe that the AMA misses holistic care and that natural immunity is all but ignored by the proponents of the vaccine. Proponents say the vaccine should be taken by everyone except the very young. Opponents say that's crazy. They point to the very low risk of serious symptoms of those under a certain age, like 25 or 35, and really a lot of age groups all the way up to 55, unless they suffer from obesity or other health risks. Opponents of the vaccine point to the people who were fully vaccinated, tested positive, and contracted COVID-19. They say, well, how can getting COVID after taking the risk with the vaccine be better than boosting your immune system and potentially getting COVID anyway? The proponents of the vaccine say that that only represents 5% of those that are vaccinated and the actual breakthrough cases are very low. Proponents also say that the vax still results in fewer symptoms if you do, in fact, get COVID after the vaccine. Proponents of the vaccine say the vaccine holdouts on religious grounds are fake. Opponents on religious grounds, believe it's immoral to create a vaccine that was developed and tested with aborted fetal tissue. Both opponents and proponents point to the VAERS, the V-A-E-R-S, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System results, and they both look at that to prove their point. As of August 7th, it reflected 443,201 events, of which 36,208 are listed as serious. Proponents of the vaccine point to three things. One, these adverse events out of 190 million vaccines only represent 0.24%. Number two, many of those reported items are mild. A few of the highest instances include short-term abdominal pain, anxiety, joint pain, lack of energy, armpit pain, back pain, increased body temperature, balance disorder, cough, cold, sweat, decreased appetite, diarrhea hit 15,000, dizziness by 52,000, difficulty breathing by 24,000, ear pain, eye pain, joint pain, swelling of the eyes, joints and face pain, skin reddening, malaise, peripheral nerve damage, fatigue by 71,000, feeling abnormal, abnormally excessive sweating, muscular weakness, headache by 88,000, migraine by just under 6,000, hives by 14,000, vertigo, blurred vision, vision impairment, vomiting, extreme pain by over 42,000. Sounds like one of those prescription ads, doesn't it? Nausea by 51,000, fever by over 71,000, and chills by 66,000 of those reporting something adverse. But their third point is, though that's a long list of mild symptoms, the average duration is less than 2 weeks. Now, the opponents go to that same virus report and point to three things as well. Number one, those that report adverse conditions to the VAERS may only represent 1% or less of the actual cases, according to the research sponsored by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. They posit that adverse reactions in reality could be as much as 100 times the VAERS, or the severe category is not 36,000, but 3.6 million. The mild symptoms above are similar to the vast majority who actually had COVID, so when comparing it to getting COVID for those with a strong immune system, the gains are not as low of a risk as is being posited when you compare them. And then number three, the variety of things that are connected to the vaccines that can be more severe is unsettling. So for example, in addition to all the mild things that we just mentioned above, the report shows spontaneous abortions, not a lot, but some, acute kidney injury, again, not that many, but some, amnesia, anaphylactic reaction, breast and chest pain, loss of consciousness, Bell's palsy, that's a facial muscle weakness, involuntary shaking due to muscle contractions, muscle spasms, facial paralysis by 1953, increased blood pressure, burning sensation, lymph node enlargement in the lungs by 13,000, blood clotting in the circulatory system, intensive care, heavy menstrual bleeding, shingles, COVID itself by 10,648 of the adverse reports, deafness by 1,053, and death by 5,739. Now, looking at death, as of July 31st, 2021, there were 5,105 deaths reported as a result of taking the vaccine. By August 7th, 2021, that number had increased to 5,739. In that same time period, there were 490 deaths connected to COVID. In other words, there were 30% more that died due to serious side effect of taking the vaccine than to COVID without one. Back to the proponents, they argue that the real world shows it's effective. For example, the University of Texas Southwest claims they experienced a 90% decrease in the number of employees in quarantine after the vaccine was made available. And everyone knows someone or is someone that has had the vaccine, and the very large percentage of them are fine. Opponents say that regardless of political viewpoint, the conflicting messages are seemingly not driven by science. On the one hand, full vaccination means no more masks. Then as soon as the breakthrough cases come, everyone's instructed to return to, even if you have been vaccinated, you still need to wear a mask. Proponents say, we're learning as the novel virus hits us with all these new curveballs. They point to the variant. COVID-19 cases are on the rise, and they primarily look to the total cases, 80,000 in the last 7 days. Opponents look to the death rate and severe symptoms. Only one person died per 702,000 in the most recent 7-day average. That's straight from CDC site. Proponents look at those deaths and state that the vast majority of those 470 deaths in that same time period did not have the vaccine. Very few with the vaccine have died of COVID. Opponents say the same can be said of those with natural immunity, those 34 million who had the disease and recovered. The death rate overall is very low over the past 7 months, taking everything into consideration. And this is due to both natural immunity and the vaccine. Just take the raw numbers as follows. We had 578,000 deaths through the end of December 2020. As of July 31st, we suffered 613,000 total. In the past 7 months, you can just take the difference, we've had about 35,000 deaths connected to COVID. Disregarding comorbidities and that whole controversy of whether or not the number of COVID-related deaths are with COVID or because of COVID or COVID causing the death, disregarding that and just factoring all those in as one lump sum the way CDC reports it, and including the peak month of January, that's an average of 5,000 deaths per month. Extrapolating that rate for the rest of the year, we will have approximately 60,000 COVID deaths in 2021. Now compare that to 660,000 deaths from heart disease, 600,000 from cancer, 170-something thousand from injuries, 150,000 to 60,000 from respiratory disease, 150,000 from stroke, 121,000 from Alzheimer's, 87,000 from diabetes. COVID will rank eighth if we get a spike that equals January through April from now to the end of the year. And if it remains at the May through July averages through the end of the year, it'll rank 11th behind suicides. Back to proponents. They say the sheer numbers show that the vaccine is safe and effective. From December 14th, 2020 through July 31st, 2021, 346 million vaccine doses have been administered in the United States. Overall, about 190 million people, or 57.5% of the total U.S. population, has received at least one dose of the vaccine. And a whopping almost 50% have been fully vaccinated. Opponents say that most of the vulnerable have already been vaccinated. And as for the rest of the population, if not in a high-risk category, it may be less risky for them to just not get the vaccine. As of the end of July, 90% of the people aged 65 and older have received at least one dose of the vaccine, and 80% are fully vaccinated. Back to opponents, they point to the study in Israel where the Pfizer vaccine was shown to be just 39% effective against the Delta variant. The proponents point to the same study and say that it still provides strong protection against severe illness and hospitalization. And, according to the proponents, other countries like the UK for Pfizer vaccine and Canada for the Moderna vaccine and the US for the Janssen vaccine show a higher efficacy rate against the severe disease than that Israeli study. And the Delta variant, already in more than 104 countries, concerns health officials in the United States as they see more breakthrough infections. They agree that fully vaccinated people will get COVID, but they argue that the symptoms will likely be mild if you have the vaccination. The opponents point to Pfizer's statement in early July. They said the effect of their vaccine is waning after 4 to 6 months. And Pfizer plans to seek authorization from the FDA for a booster dose. Many opponents believe that natural immunity is better. Israel was way ahead of the United States on vaccinations and tracking the data. The Times of Israel reports that those who recovered from COVID-19 may be better protected from reinfection than those who actually received the vaccine. The study shows that those who previously had COVID and recovered account for only 1% of the confirmed cases, while 40% of the cases in Israel come from those who were vaccinated. Quite a difference. So, the opponents of the vaccine, who believe in natural immunity, point to a number of studies. For example, one study in infection and immunity published in April by the University of Pennsylvania in collaboration with New York Medical College researchers show that once infected with a particular strain of an immunity or a disease, humans develop an immunity that can last 6 to 9 years or longer. And here's why. After a T cell has encountered and responded to a foreign bacteria, it interacts with the B cell to produce immune globulin. We'll call it the immune glob. When you recover from the infection, the immune glob can kill the invading virus. If the same virus invades again, that immediately puts its army boots on with a dramatic production of the immune glob specific for that organism. rapidly killing it and preventing disease. Opponents to the vaccine say natural immunity is a science-based immunity equal to or better than any vaccine. Proponents like University of Alabama's Dr. Paul Gepfert have never seen anything as effective as the three U.S.-approved COVID-19 vaccines. He says that with decades of vaccine history and so many people already vaccinated that there's very little chance new dangers will emerge. Opponents who are not already naturally immune but feel they have a strong immune system say, why take the risk on a non-FDA-approved vaccine if I still have to wear a mask afterward and if I can still get COVID afterward? Proponents counter that the vaccine doesn't keep you from getting COVID. It does, though, appear to dramatically help prevent long COVID. That's the side effects that come from getting COVID. Those can include lasting difficulties. And it appears to dramatically prevent hospitalizations and death from those who have been vaccinated and still get COVID. Opponents claim either that their personal immune system is strong and they don't think they will be among the hospitalized, or that their natural immunity trumps the vaccine, or that they want to wait until the FDA lists all the side effects. They ask, what makes everyone so certain there won't be long-term unsuspected problems that we don't discover until a year or two from now? We finally allow for you to place a value on the impact to your personal freedom after all of those pros and cons. These are your inputs. All of them are. You weight them the way you want to. Whether you agree with the way the government has postured things or not, even if you think you have a low risk of severe health risks, or even if you have already had COVID and recovered, you may feel that just caving to the government and many employers' push for a vaccine opens the door for you to exercise your freedom of movement. Or you may feel that there's no such thing as a freedom right that you are forced to earn. You may more heavily weight the infringement upon your freedom of choice over your own body, freedom of privacy over your health decisions, and freedom from government intrusion into your health information or thought process. There are some other relevant factors, but you get the gist. So you just sum up each column, and if you want me to send you that go, no-go vaccine spreadsheet, just sign up for the newsletter at theBarryFerrow.com. So if most of the points, after you've summed this up, go negative, you should certainly not be required to take it. Yet if you sum up the points and you come to an overwhelming positive number and you believe it provides the lowest overall risk for you, you have your decision. We should be able to openly discuss everything about a vaccine without fear of being censored or attacked. You deserve access to all the facts. Armed with that, you can make the best decision that's best for you. I'm a freedom guy. I also respect the vast majority of those in the medical profession who are honest. Most of us have family members who have been helped by modern medical wonders. I do. But there's also a humanely frail part of the public health community. They have their bias. Not only do health officials have their limits, they increasingly appear to be objectively political. And as such, they miss opportunities to help people. For example, if vaccines are as helpful as they believe, they should target the population that has the lowest vaccination levels. And these are not just Republicans, as they say. They are, according to the CDC, largely the black and brown population who mostly vote Democrat. And if they are to believe their own data on obesity being the primary link to a severe outcome, they should spend more time encouraging exercise, a better diet, and other activities that improve the individual's immune system. We cannot count on public health officials to prioritize freedom. They're focused on their definition of public health. But they should never be able to use force, and they would gain a whole lot of credibility if they'd simply encourage people to visit with a trusted medical advisor and make the decision for themselves. You know, the amazing concept of the American idea is that you do not need to seek permission to enjoy your freedom rights. You have the right to move about freely and make your own medical decisions without government's intervention. To your freedom. God bless you.
Hi, I'm David Farah. Thank you for listening to my dad's podcast, The Barry Farah Show, Culture Shift. Click subscribe now to be sure you don't miss an episode. Share this podcast with your friends on social media and give The Barry Farah Show your 5-star rating. Check out today's show notes below this episode and at TheBarryFarahShow.com. This podcast is also available in video format at TheBarryFarahShow.com. on YouTube. See you next time.